Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour, finding professional behavioral help for your furry companion. And in our Don't Eat That segment, is it okay for cats to eat bugs? First, we'll start with finding professional behavioral help. This is brought to us by the ASPCA. Many behaviors that are completely natural for dogs and cats, like barking or meowing, scratching, biting, digging, chewing, escaping, and running away, can prove to be challenging for some pet parents. Although advice abounds in the form of popular TV shows, books, and well-meaning friends and family, often the best and most efficient way to resolve your pet's behavior problems is to seek assistance from a qualified professional. Professionals in the pet behavior field fall into four main categories: trainers, certified professional dog trainers or CPDTs, applied animal behaviorists, certified applied behavioral animal behaviorists, and associate certified applied animal behaviorists. And the fourth category is diplomats of the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, or DIP-ACVBs. Here are some frequently asked questions from pet parents who are seeking professional behavioral help for their pet. What are the differences between pet behavior professionals? The first category, trainers. Pet trainers use a number of different titles, such as behavior counselor or pet psychologist and pet therapist. The level of education and experience among this group of professionals varies greatly. Most learn how to work with animals through apprenticeships with established trainers, volunteering at animal shelters, attending seminars on training and behavior, and training their own animals. And some are certified by specialized training schools. The next category is certified professional dog trainers, or CPDTs. The Certified Council for Professional Dog Trainers, CCPD, an independent organization created by the Association of Professional Dog Trainers, APDT, offers an international certification program. To learn the designation of certified professional dog trainer, an individual must accrue a requisite number of working hours as a dog trainer, provide letters of recommendation, and pass a standardized test that evaluates her or his knowledge of canine ethology, basic learning theory, canine husbandry, and teaching skill. And a CPDT must abide by a code of ethics and earn continuing education credits to maintain certification. Applied animal behaviorists, certified applied animal behaviorists, and associate certified applied animal behaviorists. An applied animal behaviorist has earned an MS, MA, or PhD in animal behavior. They are experts in dog and cat behavior and often in the behavior of other companion animal species as well, like horses and birds. Certified applied animal behaviorists, those with a doctoral degree, and associate certified applied animal behaviorists, those with a master's degree, received supervised graduate or postgraduate training in animal behavior, biology, zoology, and learning theory at accredited universities. Effective applied animal behaviorists will have expertise in A, behavior modification, so they know the techniques that produce changes in behavior, B, the normal behavior of the species they're treating, so they can recognize how and why your pet's behavior is abnormal, and C, teaching and counseling people, so they can effectively teach you how to understand and work with your pet. Most CAABs work through veterinary referrals, and they work closely with veterinarians to select the best behavior medications for pets. Next is veterinary behaviorists. Knowledge of animal behavior isn't required to earn a veterinary degree, and animal behavior isn't comprehensively taught in most veterinary training programs. However, some veterinarians seek specialized education in animal behavior and earn a a certification through the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists. To become a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, or DIP ACVB, veterinarians must complete a residency in behavior and pass a qualifying examination. In addition to having knowledge of domestic animal behavior and experience treating pet behavior problems, veterinary behaviorists can prescribe medications that can help with your pet's treatment. Issues that often require the use of medication include separation anxiety, phobias, compulsive behaviors, and fear of people, objects, or other animals. What kind of training does my pet need, you might ask? Once you've determined that you and your pet need some professional help to keep your household harmonious, consider what kind of training or treatment you need. There are group classes. If your pet needs to learn some basic manners and skills, like sit, down, and come when called, you might benefit most from group obedience classes. Group classes are also ideal for young puppies who need socialization. There are private sessions. If your dog or cat has a specific behavior problem, seeing a professional outside of a classroom context would be best. Problems like resource guarding, handling issues, separation anxiety, and aggression towards people or other animals require custom treatment plans and individual attention from a qualified behaviorist. Other less serious behavior issues that trainers and behaviorists can't usually address in a group class include house training problems, excessive barking, and destructive chewing. Day training and board and train. Day training is a great service for busy pet parents. The trainer comes to your house while you're at work, or alternatively, some train your dog in their home or facility. The trainer teaches your dog the specific obedience behaviors you want, for example, recalls, coming when called, wait, stay, walk on leash without pulling, and greeting people and pets politely. If the trainer is qualified as a behaviorist, she can also treat issues like resource guarding, handling issues, some other types of aggression, some types of excessive barking or meowing, and some fears. Board and train services involve leaving your pet in the trainer's kennels for a specified period of time. Be sure that you know and agree with the methods that your board and train or day training professional plans to use, since you will not be there to supervise. This method should also provide a training package with instructions for you. Board and train and day training programs are only effective if the trainer teaches you some skills so that you can maintain your pet's new behaviors after her training is done. How do I decide which professional to use? After you've decided between group classes, one-on-one private help, and board and train, how do you figure out which professional is right for you and your pet? Your decision will be based on a number of factors, including the type of problem your pet has, the professional's education and experience, and the availability of behaviorists and trainers in your area. Ask the right questions. We advise contacting more than one professional in your area so that you can compare their methods, credentials, and experience before making a choice. Don't hire any professional without first thoroughly interviewing her or him and asking for a couple of references from former clients and veterinarians. A good behaviorist or trainer will be happy to speak with you about her or his qualifications, background, and treatment or training methods. Consider the nature of your pet's behavior problems. If your pet has a serious behavior problem that puts him, people, or others at risk, or if he's developed a problem that causes him significant stress, seek an expert with both academic training, either a master's or doctoral degree, and practical experience. Although some CAABs, ACAABs, and DIP ACVBs charge more per session than trainers, it's because they've acquired a great deal of knowledge through years of study and research. Rule out physical problems. If your pet has a behavior problem, contacting a trainer or behaviorist is a great first step on the road to resolution. However, some behavior problems can be caused or exacerbated by physical problems. For example, if your 9-week-old puppy urinates indoors when you're not supervising him, he probably simply needs house training. But if your 5-year-old dog, who hasn't made a mistake in the house for years, suddenly starts urinating indoors, you might have a medical condition on your hands. Trainers and behaviorists specialize in pet behavior problems. Only licensed veterinarians can diagnose medical conditions. If you think that your pet is sick, injured, or experiencing any kind of physical distress, please contact your veterinarian immediately. From PetMD, is it safe for your cat to eat bugs? It doesn't take a devoted cat or dog person to let you know just how different these two species are. The signs are all around us. While dogs are considered man's best friend and have been domesticated, the social contract between cats and people has a few gray areas. It's as if cats considered our offer of being fed and having a warm place to sleep and answered, "Okay, we'll take care of the rodents, but as for the rest of that stuff, you're on your own." While we might view photographs and artwork containing dogs as a picture of domesticity, images of felines often seem to have the auspices of a wild predator lurking just beneath the surface. In our modern world, we've indeed taken the cat out of the jungle, or desert to be precise, but we haven't been as successful in taking the jungle out of our cats. Whether your cat is always crouched in a corner waiting to attack your feet as you walk by, or bringing the spoils of an outdoor hunt to your welcome mats and carpets, or to your bed, even the cutest Moggy is a little wild at heart. Cats love to hunt. They love to stalk, chase, and catch, and having a constantly filled food dish doesn't seem to quell this desire one bit. For cats living indoors, where wild game is scarce, many will go for the next best thing, insects. Why do cats chase bugs? Chasing bugs is a lot more fun than a feather tied to a stick or a ball with a bell inside. Such cat toys don't speak the inner panther in your cat the way that a living creature desperate to preserve its life does, so it's not surprising that cats just plain love hunting insects. But is this practice harmful to a cat's health? According to Dr. Megan Heron, veterinarian and clinical assistant professor of behavioral medicine at Ohio State University, hunting often has little to do with hunger. Smaller numbers of insects don't provide a major protein source, which is what cats need to eat to survive, as they are obligate carnivores. The term obligate carnivore or true carnivore is defined as an animal that must eat animal sources of protein to survive. Other mammals that are obligate carnivores exist on both the land and the sea and include minks, tarsiers, dolphins, seals, sea lions, and walruses. Non-mammal obligate carnivores include rainbow trout, salmon, hawks, eagles, crocodilians, and many snakes and amphibians. Compared to other mammals of a similar size, cats have a vastly shorter intestinal tract. Raw meat requires very little in the way of digestion in comparison to grass, for example, to draw out essential nutrients, and over time, cats have lost the ability to process carbohydrates that come from plant matter and other sources. Cats require a high amount of protein to survive, and they get the sugars they need primarily via gluconeogenesis, which utilizes protein rather than carbohydrates to make glucose. Pet owners who are vegetarian or vegan sometimes opt to mimic their diet for their pets. While a dog might survive or possibly even thrive on a vegetarian diet, this is a downright dangerous diet for cats, unless it is heavily fortified and should be avoided. Pet owners who are vegetarian need to accept the fact that their pets' diets aren't a matter of conscience or a lifestyle choice. They're simply nature, designed, and need to be respected. So, this bug hunting phenomenon seems to have its basis in behavior and not biology. Mostly, I think the chasing and eating of bugs is both fun and instinctual, as bugs are quickly moving small things and cats' brains are programmed to chase, says Dr. Heron. Since they are not quite as well domesticated as their canine counterparts, this innate desire to hunt and practice predatory behavior through play is still quite active in domestic cats. But can eating bugs make your cat sick? Internal parasites in bugs. Internal parasites are not a big concern with ingestion of insects, says Dr. Katie Grisby, DVM. The danger from ingesting insects is very small. Some types of insects can carry parasites that are able to infect cats, like Physalaptera or stomach worm, but these cases are few and far between. Bugs may also have an irritant effect on the gastrointestinal tract of cats. Vomiting and/or diarrhea is the common result. If it is severe or doesn't resolve on its own in a day or two, make an appointment with your veterinarian. But Dr. Grisby adds that mites and fleas certainly can become a problem when they infest or live on the coat of a feline. Fleas can carry tapeworms, which are transmitted when they bite the feline. Also, ticks can carry tick-borne diseases to animals when they bite and attach to an animal. There may be more to worry about when it is the bug that is doing the biting. Bee stings and spider bites certainly can cause an allergic reaction, localized or anaphylactic, which often needs to be treated by a veterinarian. Do pesticides make bugs poison to cats? We do our best to keep insects on the outside, and many of us turn to insecticides to combat bugs inside the house. Since these poisons need to be ingested to be effective, and because the purpose of many of these products is to have a wandering insect bring the substance back to the nest to kill en masse, pet owners might be concerned about the effect that eating a poisoned insect could have on their pets. As it turns out, in most cases, there isn't any need to worry. The dying bugs have such a low amount of toxin that it is very unlikely that an owner will see any side effects in their pet, says Dr. Grisby. Still, when pet owners are going to use any type of chemicals around the home, insecticides or otherwise, a little research is always your best bet. In other words, read the label. When using insecticides, it is pertinent to make sure that the owner reads the label to make certain there are no pyrethrins or pyrethroids, as high concentrations of these can cause severe tremors, elevated temperature, and seizure in some felines, says Dr. Grisby. I've seen many cases of roach bait ingestion, which almost never causes any side effects in cats. Possibly mild gastrointestinal signs, but that's all. Rodenticide is another story. If an owner thinks that their animal has ingested an insecticide, I recommend contacting their local veterinarian or a poison control hotline such as the ASPCA, says Dr. Grisby. It is helpful for the owners to have as much information about the product when contacting these sources, such as the bottle in hand, to read off active ingredients. Do cats miss hunting? Do our cats missing the daily hunt for game and bugs just happen to serve as a handy replacement for this instinct? Or is it just kittenish behavior that persists over the life of our cats? Yes, I do believe that cats use insects as a substitute for hunting. Kittens, in general, are more playful, so they may seem to hunt more often, but it is really just playtime, says Dr. Grisby. If you watch your cats, they oftentimes won't even ingest the insect. They will hunt, bat, and place them in their teeth, but oftentimes will not swallow it. So, though we likely never know for sure, domesticated cats seem to be hunting to pass the time. So while your cat's bug hunting might be bad news for the insects in your home, it all comes down to cats being cats, staying wild at heart, and having fun while they're at it. This article was written by David F. Kramer and reviewed for accuracy by Dr. Jennifer Coates, DVM. Remember, in the last report, we mentioned rodenticides. Here is information on rat poison ingestion in cats. anticoagulant toxicity in cats. Although designed to kill rats and mice, cats often find rodenticides, rat and mouse poison, tempting as well. But not all rodenticides are composed of anticoagulants, a type of drug that prevents blood from clotting by interfering with vitamin K, a key ingredient in the clotting process. When taken in sufficient quantities by the cat, it results in spontaneous bleeding, internal bleeding, external bleeding, or both. If left untreated, this could prove fatal for your cat. What to watch for? Typically, it takes 2 to 5 days for the following symptoms associated with anticoagulant poisoning to appear. The symptoms are bruising, pale gums, blood in the urine, feces, or vomit, bleeding from gums, nose, rectum, eyes, or ears, weakness, staggering gait, depression, blood accumulation in the chest, the hemothorax, which may lead to shallow or labored breathing, and blood accumulation in the abdomen or hemoabdomen, which may cause the abdomen to distend. The primary cause: cats can ingest toxic doses of anticoagulants by eating rodenticide left on the ground or by eating a rodent that has ingested rodenticide. There are many forms of anticoagulant used in rodenticide. Some of the more common forms are warfarin, Brodofoquin, and bromodiolane. Immediate care: call your veterinarian, the nearest animal hospital, or the pet poison helpline at 1-855-213-6680, especially if you notice your cat is bleeding. If you can find the container or label for the poison, bring it with you to the veterinarian. Veterinarian care: the diagnosis, if you should witness your cat eating rodenticide or see pieces of rat poison in her vomitus, anticoagulant poisoning is a near certainty. However, otherwise, if your cat should start bleeding without cause, your veterinarian will conduct blood tests to determine if the time it takes for the blood to clot is abnormally long. However, blood tests should not be the only determining factor for diagnosis, as the clotting time for a cat that has only recently ingested anticoagulants is normal, only to gradually worsen until the point where the blood can no longer effectively clot. If there is uncertainty about whether the symptoms are due to an anticoagulant, your veterinarian will do additional tests to make that determination. Treatment. If the anticoagulant is suspected to have been ingested within the past 2 hours, and if you have not already done so, your veterinarian will induce vomiting. Activated charcoal is given orally within 12 hours after ingestion of the poison to absorb any of the toxin that may still be in the intestines. Vitamin K is also given by injection, followed by 1 to 4 weeks of vitamin K tablets given orally at home. The length of the prescription is determined by the type of anticoagulant. If your cat is actively bleeding, he will be hospitalized and monitored until the bleeding stops. If blood loss is severe, your cat may require intravenous fluids or blood transfusion. There may be a need for special treatments if other problems should arise. For example, if there is bleeding into the chest, that blood will need to be drained so that the cat can breathe easier. Other causes: human medications that contain anticoagulants like Coumadin and other blood thinners are a potential source of anticoagulant poisoning. Living and management: once your cat is stable, she will be sent home with a vitamin K prescription to be given orally. It is best to give it with canned food, as the fat in the food will help it to be absorbed. It is also important for your cat to get the full course of vitamin K prescribed, even if she seems fine. It often takes a while for certain anticoagulants to be eliminated from a cat's body. Your veterinarian will schedule follow-up tests to monitor your cat's blood count and clotting time. Please note, the vitamin K your veterinarian prescribes is in a highly concentrated form. The vitamin K you can buy over the counter is only a small fraction of the strength needed and will not be enough to help your cat. And prevention. It is best not to use rodenticides if you have pets or young children in your home. There are other products that can control rodents without the use of poison. Your cat may even be willing to help with the rodent control. In addition, since you have no control over how your neighbors eliminate rodents, it is best not to let your cat outside unsupervised. And now, for the portion of the program I like to call Don't Eat That. This time, pet food and product recalls and alerts. The American Veterinary Medical Association, or AVMA, says when pet foods or animal-related products are recalled or alerts are issued about safety concerns, you need to know ASAP. We update our information as soon as we receive notification and can verify that the recall or alert is real. You can follow the @AVMA Recall Watch Twitter feed to stay informed. No Twitter profile is necessary to view the feed. Recalls and alerts are also posted on AVMA's Facebook page. For information about reporting an adverse event associated with an animal health product, you can visit the Reporting Adverse Events page. You will find sections on this topic, such as pet food safety recalls and alerts and product alerts, and recalls on items for all kinds of animals and animal feed. For more information, you can visit the AVMA's website at avma.org. You can visit PetMD's website for updated alerts and recalls at petmd.com. And you can also visit the FDA's website for recalls by the FDA at www.fda.gov/animal-veterinary/safety-health/recalls-withdrawals. There you will find updated and archived lists of recalled pet food, drugs, and pet-related items, as well as information on how to report a pet food complaint and how to report animal drug side effects and product problems. And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Please join me again next time for more pet fun and information. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.